So I'd love to hear your questions, comments, anything you'd like to share to start with. I could say another way to inspire you to dare to speak could be what has in this day so far meant something to you, what has touched you, what has stood out, whether in an uncomfortable way or in a way that felt very helpful. So when you say how fast our lives are, do you mean how fast the day is going, or a sense of that perspective in your life? Or
a sense of slowing down today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the day not going fast, but
okay.
Just slowing down today and enjoying that, but finding that confronting as well. Mm-hmm. Because not being able to meditate as much as I'd like to, because I just keep going.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But I know that I can... Yeah, tomorrow will be better.
So yeah.
Hopefully I'll be more rested.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, if we start rather from our unknowing about what should happen today, then we don't know if sleeping is better than meditating. Maybe. Maybe not. We don't even know what is... Sometimes we're not sure if we were sleeping or meditating. And so the unknowing can just be, even if it sounds like being more vague to unknow, sometimes it has a real clear honesty of there was some sleeping. There was something that we could say, maybe I was meditating, I'm not sure, because I don't know what meditation is. And oh, wait a second, I actually don't really know what sleep is either. But there were those times where it was something that seemed to be between sleep and meditation. And then that's quite a clear picture of the day. And that's also a lot going on in a kind of a half day. 6 hours. Which has a really different feeling from, oh, I wish I weren't so tired, you know, the usual mode of lack that is where our thinking is trained to. Yeah, cool. Great, thanks. Anyone else?
I've got a lot of trying to feel that exercise with you, trying to feel the heart.
Mm-hmm.
I've done that before, and it was great because I was sort of caught up in that.
So wait, I think probably, can you hear anything? You can. In the back they can hear, and in the middle they cannot hear.
Okay. So somehow switching off the mind and moving to the heart, I found I didn't realise how tight my shoulders were, and I just found that movement was a lot of release of the shoulders, and starting to feel, I shifted from mind to space into a heart. More of that.
Thank you. Could you hear in the middle? No? I can summarize maybe, and you can then I'll know if I heard you well. Joe enjoyed the shift from a lot of thinking to release across her shoulders and chest, and feeling also more in a heart space that feels to her more balanced than how she was at first in the beginning of the day. Is that?
Okay.
Through the movement, she found her body releasing that, and that seemed related to also what happened in the afternoon guided meditation. So through physical and through mental, emotional, spiritual practices, a similar kind of movement happening from head to heart. From feeling out of balance to feeling balanced. Okay? Yeah? Okay. Anyone more? Yeah. Now your turn to be a little loud.
Yes. I feel today a lot of movement inside. So especially during the connected movement, I felt more inside, turning around. And I try to move like this, but it's not really possible because the movements are so without an expression.
Okay.
And it's very hard for me today to stand. When you were explaining the walking meditation, I felt like I didn't get air.
Yeah.
I couldn't breathe anymore. It was like a pressure here, and it felt really small in my breast. I tried it outside again, and it was not there. It's only inside and with people. I don't know.
Good. Cool. So she's feeling a lot of movements inside her body, and standing was almost impossible inside.
Okay.
Yeah. So what comes to my mind is just to mention, just as those who arrived this morning for the first time and being in silence for the 6 hours, there's some energy starting to gather, intensity. And for those of us, a few people in the room who've actually come to every event that I've done here in Melbourne and nearby, like you, there's more energy building. So sometimes when the energy builds, there starts to be a shift, a transformation that has weird symptoms. It also, I think, can hear the water bottle in the back, that's a good idea when there's transformation going on to drink plenty of water as a practical thing. So taking care of the physical, practical side, and also accepting that along the way, sometimes funny things go on. And meeting that from this, playing with meeting that from the unknowing without leaving out the knowing, like drink some water. And we don't know what's happening, but it seems likely it's related to the gathering energy momentum in your practice over these months. You've been doing a lot of retreat, and in these last couple of weeks, it's a kind of, there's a certain thread that's been gathering and emerging from the first evening through 4-day retreat, the second evening, not today. So it just happens that way. Okay. So I'd like to call the talk All of It. All of It. And we've already had a few good examples of how we can start to think of what a spiritual life is. Sometimes I really struggle with the word spiritual because I think that it's just life. Life is intrinsically spiritual. Why add the word spiritual to it? But recently I came across a kind of definition of the word spiritual or spirituality that talked about vastness. So kind of putting an emphasis on vastness in life. And I like that as something to play with. Putting an emphasis on vastness in this life. So calling it spiritual life. Because it's so easy to get caught up in what we think we know and the practical side. So in Kjellstein's example of feeling basically kind of dizzy, it sounds like along those lines.
It's nice, but
yeah, okay. But hard to stand up. It would be one possibility that could be easy for some people would be to freak out. Oh my God, and during the meditation, imagining the ambulance coming and everything. Or for some people, it would be easy to leave out the practical, like, well, it might not be physical in any way, but might as well drink some water. Jaya always says drink water, so might as well drink some water. So I think we like to forget one end or the other and not just keep all of it. It could be worth drinking water. It's not going to really hurt to drink some water. Let's drink some water. It was good standing outside instead of standing inside. So even if it wasn't unpleasant, but let's maybe fresh air is a good idea also. And, oh, isn't it interesting? It's when I'm with other people that something unknown is happening, something I can't recognize. So that's just interesting. From that just interesting, that's just interesting place, there could come some experiments. There could come a way that opens out from here I am feeling in a room of people. I'm aware I'm with people. I'm standing. Standing seems to be an ordinary small thing, but try it sometimes. You can still have time today to try standing as a meditation posture. And it does have a lot of power. Sometimes it can be hard to stand for meditation, though we stand in line, etc., for quite a while. To stand for meditation, sometimes a lot of heat can come, dizziness can come, it can be overwhelming. So it's interesting to play with. There are a few lines from a work of St. John of the Cross, San Juan de la Cruz, The Living Flame of Love. Love. Where he's describing some of the steps along the way in a spiritual life. So in a life where we're playing with not leaving out the vastness. So already we can hear how in a spiritual life, not leaving out the vastness, we need to also not leave out the smallness, the particular. So all of it. So San Juan is just describing some steps that happen along the way in a spiritual life that he's maybe experienced in his own path, in his own life, but also he was a spiritual advisor to many people. And so he had the great chance of hearing from many people on their different ways, similar steps happening. And here's another place we could just pause and feel for how all of it, being ready to embrace all of it, is important. Which is San Juan de la Cruz's experience was enriched not only through his own deep practice and confrontation with intense events in his life, like being imprisoned and things like that, but his spiritual life also was empowered, enriched, partly formed by being a teacher. And so, not that we want to put ourselves up as a teacher, but also not to put ourselves only down as a student. But the possibility of how much learning can happen and needs to happen by sharing. So sometimes the time is right for just sharing with one friend what you're excited about or what you're confused about or a technique that you learn. It could be just that simple, I read about this today. And by talking about it, there's some clarifying that can happen, as well as maybe being helpful, hopefully, for the person. And then that way of learning through teaching or sharing will have its own life as well. Well, there will come challenges to get over what happens when I'm with people, that area that Kirsten has brought up. Where often, for many people, I think because we mean so much to each other, even if we don't know each other, but because you're in a human body, you mean too much to me sometimes. So often that's terrifying. For many people, it's terrifying. Like if I say, okay, now tell me, ask me, say something. For some people, there would be like, yeah, okay. But for many people, like, the membrane closes. And it's just a great place to feel into the membrane between me and you. And when it's open and the chemistry is freely happening, how is that? And what closes the membrane? And also just to honor that we mean so much to each other. Even if my habit is more that I'm too much teaching, and you're not at all interested in what I would have to say or show. I'm trying to get something through confirmation or putting myself above you or whatever. Getting a position. Even if we tend to do that, we can feel that that's a kind of a closed membrane. I'm not open to feel you, so I'm missing out. So similarly, we in the seeing meditation that we did today, some of you did with me today, that you now know how to do on your own whenever you want. It can be interesting to play with simply sitting or lying or standing and seeing something. And then playing with, is there enough room for me in this relationship? Where am I? How am I in this? A feeling for yourself, feeling for what technically would be called the seer, the seer. And how is that? Is there enough room for the other? Could there be more room for the other? Do I actually feel the other as I see? And just playing with, it sounds strange, but it's actually just so simple and takes a bit of practice, and then it's easy to play with. Feeling as if into the object, feeling the other, the seeming other. And then a third thing that might not come so easily to mind, so leaving room for yourself, for the seer, leaving room for the other, for the object, but also leaving room for the connection between the two as another thing. It has a different quality. It's invisible, but maybe it actually exists as a thing, a connection between seer and object. Just in the simple example of seeing an object, which I won't even call looking at an object, letting the object be seen. The practice of allowing seeing to happen and then feeling into this connection between the eyes and the thing. It's a practice that's suggested in one of my favorite Sanskrit texts. Practicing that, then something else comes available. Tuning into the connection between, you can play with it right now if you want. It might need a few weeks of practice before you can really get a sense of being with yourself, leaving room for yourself, for the seer, for whatever it is that sees, mystery, leaving room for what is seen actually ends up being, whatever that is, equally a mystery. Leaving room for the connection between as a third thing, another mystery, and then tuning into that connection, what becomes available is another thing. That other thing that comes available is what I already mentioned in the beginning of the day when I talked about in that sort of opening talk, guided meditation, about courage and sensitivity, needing something to lead, So it's obvious that we could be courageous and do really stupid things. And we could be sensitive as well and be unable to function. And we could be courageous and sensitive also. And still be putting our energy in sort of backwards, exactly where it needs not to go, where it's not helpful. And if we could be aware of ourselves as people who are interested in spiritual life today, in a country where we're following traditions, we're being enriched by traditions that don't have roots here, and the traditions that did have roots here are a bit in transition. So the original ones of the people before the Europeans and then the Judeo-Christian traditions that came with the Europeans are also a bit flailing, you can say, and a bit causing what seems to be quite a lot of unnecessary suffering, suffering that could potentially go like water off a duck's back. And so we as, let's say, people with spiritual life or interest in that, need to be aware that we're forming a new spiritual support system as we go along. It's not already in place. What that means is there isn't enough spiritual support at hand in a way that is obvious. It might be at hand in ways that are not obvious, and then it takes a lot of courage and sensitivity to go with that. So as we go along, we're making it up as we go along, as teachers and students. So it does often happen that our great sincerity, we're doing our best, we're putting sometimes a lot of energy, we're putting maybe everything into spiritual intentions. And then it's frustrating. Not just because we need more patience, but because we're a bit churning the mud. We don't quite have traction. And so it's partly just a matter of the times we're in and the place that we're in. There can be some enthusiasm about being part of forming something collectively together as we go along, but there can also, and there's this encouragement to really be wise and just a little bit more pause in considering how your courage and sensitivity will be moved from what place, by whom, by whose inspiration, and not necessarily just going along with a system that's presented that came from here or came from there or wherever. All of those systems are in flux. Does that make sense? Or too many ways to go.
Yeah.
I'll read a poem about that. So this is a poem by Wendell Berry, a U.S. poet. What a surprise. I've been using his poetry in every talk so far this time in Melbourne. This one is a short poem called The Arrival. And it's, as usual, speaking from a love of nature about more than just biological nature. So he's speaking about all of it by speaking about nature. The arrival. Like a tide, it comes in, wave after wave of foliage and fruit. Foliage are leaves. Like a tide, it comes in, wave after wave of foliage and fruit. The nurtured and the wild. Out of the light to this shore. In its extravagance, we shape the strenuous outline of enough. Wave after wave of foliage and fruit, the nurtured and the wild, out of the light to this shore. Like a tide, it comes in. In its extravagance, we shape the strenuous outline of enough. So we could say we have two kinds of enough, two kinds of enough, enoughness. Or two kinds of enoughness practice. The main one is feeling that there is enough, that you are enough, that it is enough, that there is enough. Noticing that there's like way more than enough, actually, and that you're way more than enough. But sometimes we feel so like such a miserable person, so inadequate or so small or whatever, that it's hard enough to just feel enough. So the practice of being enough, having enough, that you are enough, that it is enough, that life is enough. And then the other side of enoughness practice would be, out of all of that way more than enough, what's actually enough? So with all the courage that starts to build and be ready, kind of springiness, and then all the sensitivity that starts to get refined and responsive, especially with more courage, more responsive, with more sensitivity, more courage, where is it going to go? Where is it going to go? All that energy is gathering. So there's where we would be freaked out that we had, there's so much energy, and just kind of like try to put it somewhere. So for example, for some people, it can be weird to find on a meditation retreat that they experience sexual energy. That's supposed to like not come in the door of a meditation hall, is our idea, which we got from not sure where. And so when it does, first there's like, whoa, no, shh. And then, oh, here it is, okay, well, feeling the sensations, etc. Trying to sort of pretend to do our best or whatever, or getting into it. And then whichever way, there's a feeling of its fullness or completeness as it is, its naturalness. And then that gets powerful, and the tendency of pointing it into a fantasy or towards a person or towards an action or whatever. So it's not that we shouldn't engage with someone in that energy or have a fantasy or have a sensation or whatever. But to feel when it's basically an escape from the intensity of life, to point it too much, too fast, too quickly, too away. And just letting all of it be. And then out of all the possibilities, just feel the sensation, go into a fantasy, transmute the energy or whatever. What is that strenuous outline of enough out of all that abundant life energy in whatever form? This is just one example. So out of all the possibilities of spiritual techniques that nowadays we could almost say we've all heard, whether we would say so or not, I would bet that everyone in the room could list 10 spiritual techniques, whether you've ever done a retreat before or not. And often that just gets in the way and it gets clunky and paralyzing. So what is the wave of intelligence that the courage and sensitivity can kind of merge, trust, and sort of be led by or follow, like the crest of the wave and then the rest of the wave? So all that power, what can it follow? What's trustworthy as leader, as leadership? So in the poem, The Arrival, he doesn't give much of a suggestion, except that there is, he says, a strenuous outline of enough. But let's just read it through one more time to hear any openings. like a tide, it comes in. So a tide, already then we can feel that sometimes there isn't actually the sense of a wave of abundance. The wave is going out, or the tide is going out. Not to worry. So again, all of it. Sometimes the sense of release and actually going with the release, enjoying that we're letting go, or in a time of letting go. So the relief of letting go of thinking and having more heart space, the relief of letting go of tension in the shoulders, letting the body do it by itself, and how that also brings more harmony, as Joe was describing. And then other times the tide comes in, and it's not so much your fault or your skill necessarily, but the timing is such that the tide does come in. So part one little clue here is that we can tune to the tides a bit and go with it and enjoy now the relief of letting go of all that thinking, or the relief of letting go of all that emotion into what we're calling unknowing, without necessarily discarding the knowing, but prioritizing or centering with the unknowing, which could be like the acceptance that tide is rising. When I was really getting into letting go, now the tide is rising. I was really getting into receiving, now it's receding. Wave after wave of foliage and fruit. Whatever there's an abundance of at the moment, maybe a pause and just sensing into the crazy mystery of whatever it is, in the same way that foliage, for example, is really bizarre, that out of this, especially of these great tree trunks here in Australia, so many of them are probably born looking 100 years old. So ready for the heat or drought or whatever. And even so, something that can like catch the light and fold and unfold, totally different color, like just comes right out of it by itself. Wave after wave of foliage and fruit, the nurtured and the wild. So there is what we can kind of bank on, like where we did find that what we have done in the past, thank goodness, we're so grateful to the coincidences and the effort and the good advice and the support, the nurtured foliage and fruit that also comes in a wave. So there's what we did to nurture that, and there's how it comes through. And there's the wild. So on top of that, there's how even what we nurture comes through, not only through our making and our doing, but without it, it doesn't. And then there's also the wild, the unexpected, the ways that our nature is suitable for spiritual life in ways that we can't guess, that are really beyond imagination. Suitable for enoughness, for vastness, for being more than what we thought or could ever think, more than what can fit inside thinking. And sometimes it comes into our conscious awareness, and sometimes it goes out of our conscious awareness. And it comes, in Wendell Berry's phrase, out of the light to this shore. It's a beautiful phrase for how we can, again, feel the aliveness in things, whether inner things or outer things. So there might be an abundance of anger, and we think that's not fruit, that's like a wildfire or whatever. So wildfire is natural. Wildfire is a kind of fruit. Or maybe the anger is a kind of fruit sometimes. Not only destructive, but nourishment as well. We could feel how things have their beginnings in something other than the visible, recognizable form, out of the light to this shore, getting washed up. Connecting with what I mentioned in the afternoon guided meditation, the possibility of feeling kinship, openness, tenderness with and for all of these forms, including your own. Partly through being in touch with what is not held in that form, what is not determined by that form. So like the Zen phrase of your face before you were born, or even before your parents were born. So again, this, all of it. When we leave room for spiritual life, for life that has just this slight emphasis on the vastness because of our great emphasis on the particular, it can feel like it's the missing piece. When we tune into, for example, an appreciation of something, we have a soft spot for chocolate cake or sunshine coming through rain, or sitting on the ground, or the delicious lunch that was made by several people in the room last night for us today. We can leave room for that soft spot, that appreciation for something particular, and in its particularities, that particular taste, that particular feeling of the sun, or that particular smell, or whatever. And to leave room for what's more than that, in the chocolate cake, in the sunshine, in that experience of the chocolate cake or sunshine, what's more than that? It leaves room for us to feel in its completeness the experience of the chocolate cake or the sunshine in a way that we can't if we're just focusing only on the limited. So specifically, then that opens out the mystery of each moment of taste, or each moment of sensation. It's what Chögyam Trungpa calls drawing down the vastness into each sense perception. So if we think of the sun coming through the rain, whether that's a beautiful thing to see or to feel, the completeness of that moment includes the particular and includes how the bottom dropped out. And it wasn't just about the color and the sensation on the shoulder. So a kind of completeness, the completeness of that taste, the completeness of that sense or visual experience. It's a completeness, it's a kind of strange perfection that includes the unknown. It includes the momentum that's built into any experience that's leading towards the next experience. And this is where we start to get the feeling for how our courage and sensitivity would be moved. That even though the chocolate cake experience or the sunshine through the rain experience feels beautiful, and there could be that small part of the mind that wants it to stay forever or wants to repeat it immediately, or plans then to do it again tomorrow. We can so easily feel with the courage and sensitivity how that is an escape from the intensity of the experience. And staying with the intensity of the experience out of our love for it, for the aliveness in the experience, that what makes the experience beautiful is not actually that sort of actually quite bitter and way too sweet at the same time taste, or too hot and too cold feeling, too bright and too dark color. But we could say the aliveness in it. And the fact that any experience can have its completeness, its goodness, its sense of coming to rest with it, not needing anything to be different. There's still included in the experience an incompleteness in a way, a movement towards the next moment, the next experience. The cloud then covers the sun, or the rain is completely gone. And in the same way that we can be sensitive to feel the tide is now coming in, there may be several layers of tides doing different things at different times, but let's simplify for now. The tide is coming in. We can start to feel that and be less like churning against it. And the tide is going out. We can breathe out with it, let go with that. Surf that, let that empower our practice. Rather than the feeling, oh no, as if only it's good when it's coming in. Oh no, now I have to wait again for the next tide to come. This is the same direction happening, but it just happens to be going out. Does that make sense? Sometimes we can get a sense of that with the breath, where the out-breath is going out and there's a sense of maybe falling. The in-breath is going in and a sense of rising, but there's a way that it's one direction. There's another underlying, sometimes, sense of continuity. That's not imposed. We're not like trying to make the breath do that. But there can be a discovery of that sometimes. Our sensitivity can start to feel before it starts to happen, the tide's coming in or the tide's on its way out. And that quite has a clarity that invites the courage to show up and just very frankly meet what's happening and how we can participate in it. In a way that's not like greedy, but just that the spiritual life is not actually about this personal agenda, but about this. And then the movement comes through. And then it keeps coming through out of the light into this shore. And we get into the fun of how it keeps not being quite what we expected, and then it is exactly what we expected, which is unexpected, etc. The extravagance of that. In its extravagance, we shape the strenuous outline of enough. So San Juan gives some helpful advice from his experience with himself and with other people. He also talks about a continuity that happens. And he talks about it in God terms. He says continuous loving attentiveness of the will to God, which in a way is what we've been talking about in totally different language. So a kind of continuity out of the love of it, rather than out of an obligation or should or trying to get it right. A loving attentiveness. Attentiveness is the sensitivity and courage together. But then where are we going to attend to what? A continuous loving attentiveness. Through the loving, through allowing appreciation, allowing the soft spot to expand and leave room for the mystery, the vastness in things and in us and in our experience, even in a sense perception, let alone in a dog or a person or an insect or a tree. Continuous loving attentiveness of the will to God. So of the capacity to be moved, the capacity to give everything, to garner all of our resources and put it all in. To what San Juan calls God. He describes this as happening, this continuous loving attentiveness of the will to God, so of the courage and sensitivity, of the readiness to the unknowing intelligence, we can say, to what's emerging, to a direction that has a continuity. He's describing the landscape around that, the inner landscape around that is peaceful goodness. And so one practice that can help us start to feel what could lead is to feel what has goodness in your experiential sense, not in as an idea, not as right or wrong, but it actually feels good to feel contact with the ground or to allow the out-breath to have its own pace or whatever. Then San Juan calls this working for God, which is, if we take that one phrase out, it sounds really nice and funny in our everyday modern context where we're doing so much work all the time. And it could be a good phrase to bring with you to the office and the kitchen and the daily tasks, even brushing the teeth, even meditating. I'm just working for God. Even if you think I'm working for you, I'm working, et cetera. Even if I'm unemployed, I'm working for whatever way to play with it. So working for God, we can, if you like to replace the word God with something more that means more to you, then please do. Working for the unknowing, working for vastness, maybe. Working for the intelligence that's freed when we are in touch with vastness and particular. That's what we're working for. Without thinking or being aware, she is doing so. So San Juan uses the word she for the soul. As in many spiritual traditions, it's the spiritual seeker is described as female, probably in just a very simplistic kind of metaphor for receptivity. And then San Juan says what comes in that, so we don't even get to have that ego boost of thinking that I look at all this I'm doing for God. We have maybe that sense working for God would be this feeling of it's complete now and it's complete now and it's complete now. Even though I like that better, this is also has its completeness. Now it's raining. That has its completeness. Now I got into the raining, now it stopped raining. That has its goodness. And something in us starts to be allowed to track the goodness. And the way that we've been tracking ourselves all along, am I doing all right? Am I keeping up with everybody? I'm way behind. And all the drama that we use to escape the intensity of living starts to, in the overall picture, lessen and periodically flare up. So San Juan says there's a new knowledge that comes, which is actually an innocence. And he says it's like Adam, where there's no longer seeing things as right or wrong. So Adam before eating of the tree of knowledge of right, of good and evil. And instead of being sort of like the shy, sensitive soul retiring and just waiting to be told what to do by the big boss, sort of in the stereotypical feminine. There's the possibility of kind of riding this direction, this continuous direction with loving attention, because we love it, because it's good in a peaceful environment inside. There's the possibility of working with anything and everything, daring and determined in all their works, in the phrase of San Juan. So there's innocence, but it's not then a disengagement or going into a bubble or a la-la. There's daring and determination in that continuity, without a self-awareness and self-congratulation that I'm doing all of this. There is the enjoyment of it. There is the joy of it. And then we come to what San Juan calls the original state of unknowing. And in that, we've already mentioned this, acquired knowledge of the sciences, he calls it, is not lost. So we're not in a fight against that, but there's just, we put emphasis somewhere else, which is a revolution, because we don't so far just put emphasis on our thinking and our, let's say, scientific knowledge, so knowledge about things. We rely completely on that for our guidance, at the great expense of our actual intelligence that's inbuilt in a human being. So the acquired knowledge, we could say about things, rather than from the experience of being them or being in them or being in touch with it all. That acquired knowledge is not lost. We still drink water. Rather, it is perfected by, so then he has another funny word, by the supernatural knowledge infused into the soul. So the way I would put it today would be that there is the inbuilt potential intelligence that has no limit, that can work with anything, that's given room to move. So it's in there and it's given room to move and permeate our most inner sanctum. It's infused into the soul as when a faint light, which is the scientific knowing, the knowledge about, as when a faint light mingles with a big light, with a bright light, the bright light prevails. So we're not kicking out the thinking. The thinking starts to happily come along because it starts to see the this is the best friend it could ever have, some real intelligence. A direction where we can put everything in and something comes out. And not only that, but wave after wave. And all of this, he says, is nothing special. Thank goodness he mentions that. But just our, what he calls, full stature as human beings, maturity as human beings. So he means nothing special in the sense it's really possible for all of us. It's not out of reach. And included in that is the kind of warning that where I'm looking for specialness, I'm going away, I'm escaping the intensity of the ordinariness. Ordinary is not a put down. Ordinariness is the home of vastness. Is there any question or comment? So Mitra has a question about the seeing meditation. Let me just check the schedule. Let's ask now.
If
Can you speak a little louder so I don't need to repeat?
Very interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done that before, so I was, and I'm curious to, you know, do that more. But I find it more challenging because the thinking process basically get activated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I was looking at this mirror and I was thinking, well, is there any pattern for these colors?
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not, okay. You think about the psychology of, you know, all that, you know. And then you hear.
Can you hear? Yeah? In the middle, can you hear? Yeah, okay.
It's harder to switch off the mind.
Yeah.
I mean, as you said, you don't have to switch it off. Sort of, you have to change the focus. And the thinking, there's always room for thinking to happen, as you said before. But anyway, I found it challenging because I was thinking about, you know,
everything.
That. And then you mentioned something very interesting. You said to focus basically on the connection. And like basically there's room for me, room for this, and then the connection between me and this. And then I'm trying to understand the meaning of connection. Is it?
Yeah. So this is no, that's you. How I feel about it is me. That's in the realm of leaving room for me. So it's really through practicing. So give it a few weeks or months. 20 minutes a day, 30 minutes a day. And it's actually quite a very specific experience. And that maybe one way to describe it is as if there's actually like some kind of line of energy between the eyes and the thing that you can then feel. And similarly with people, we might think, I'm trying to leave room for the other, and so I'm feeling, how do I feel about the other? But that's me. Leaving room for the other is another experience. Like opening and giving space, or just literally asking a question and listening. And then leaving room for the connection between is then again another experience. And then tuning to the connection helps leave room for this subtle intelligence that is more powerful, is a more powerful guide or leader. Yeah. But it's a practical experiential thing that you just have to walk the steps and then it's possible. Okay. Let's have a couple minutes quiet, please. Just leaving room for our experiencing beyond idea. And the quality of aliveness there. and the movement or creativity that sometimes emerges as if out of nowhere by resting there in our own experience beyond idea. So it can include idea, but resting beyond idea. May our practice and our lives be dedicated towards the momentum towards freedom for all.